Good morning. As always, it's wonderful to see your faces and to sit together. So, this morning's reflections are on Parsha B'chukotai, the last Torah portion in the book of Leviticus. And it raises the question for me, what makes for a good life? We all want to know that, of course. So B'chukotai addresses this question, and on the surface, the words of Yud-Heh Vav-Heh quoted here promise blessings for those who follow my laws and faithfully observe my commandments. And here are some of the blessings. I will grant peace in the land, and you shall lie down untroubled by anyone. I will give the land respite from vicious beasts, and no sword shall cross your land. You will have abundant food and abundant progeny. So that sounds like a good, peaceful life. Of course, there are also promises that you'll be able to wipe out your enemies, which seems a bit in conflict with no sword shall cross your land. But there are always conflicting narratives here. But most important, there is God's promise, I will be ever in your midst. I will not spurn you. I will be your God, and you shall be my people. So this is the promise of intimacy with God, and it's the theme of Aviva Zornberg's reflections on the book of Leviticus, her book, The Hidden Order of Intimacy. The surface reading of Leviticus, the book for the Levites, the priests, appears to be an endless list of laws for ritual sacrifice, for the way the priests dress and do ritual sacrifice. However, Aviva Zornberg's reading reveals that all these rituals and sacrifices can be seen as efforts to repair a broken connection with Yud-Heh Vav-Heh. And the break occurred with the golden calf, when the people became too impatient to wait for Moses to return with the commandments and the Torah. Instead, they insisted that Aaron make them a visible idol that they could see and worship directly. However, by extracting any one part from the interconnected oneness of all life and worshiping that solid, solitary thing, which this would be idolatry, in doing this, we lose our connection to Yud-Heh Vav-Heh, the unfolding of life in each moment. In the aftermath of the golden calf rupture with Yud-Heh Vav-Heh, Zornberg sees the book of Leviticus as a pathway back to intimacy and connection with God. So by the end of the book of Leviticus this week, we revisit that promise of intimacy and the threat of relationship rupture in the blessings and curses of Parsha B'chukotai. Leading up to these blessings and curses are a few important communications from God that were in last week's reading, Bahar, and Yocheved beautifully described the important message of the rules for Shemitah, letting the land rest. Stop, stop doing and fixing, and be with the world of creation just as it is. This is, of course, what we do when we sit in silence in our meditation practice, in our practice of observing Shabbat. We redirect our attention from figuring out what's wrong and how to fix it, and we assume a stance of allowing the unfolding of life to arise and pass in each moment. When we do this in meditation, we may feel a particular kind of intimacy with reality. Rabbi Alan Liu used the term flush with reality. We are flush with reality when we are not separating ourselves from life by being the critic, the observer. We are just allowing the experience of life to unfold. At the same time that we're reading the book of Leviticus, we're also counting the Omer. And here the cycle of Torah readings and the cycle of the holidays and observances overlap, reminding us of Reb Moshe's image of the Jewish gyroscope, the different cycles of Jewish observance that spin in interrelated paths and hold us in balance. So today we're in the 38th day of the counting of the Omer, the 50 days that start with the second night of Passover, which this year was April 23, and leading up to Shavuot, which this year falls on the night of Tuesday, June 11. We celebrate the story of our liberation on Passover, and then we have 50 days to prepare for our personal experience of revelation on Shavuot. As Shavuot celebrates the receiving of Torah as well as the harvest of the first fruits. This week is the sixth week of the Omer, and it's associated with the Sfirah of Yesod, of bonding, connection, and intimacy. In her book on Leviticus, Zornberg shares a midrash and its interpretation by the Sfat Emet that connects our need to repair this ruptured relationship with God and the journey from liberation, Exodus, to revelation, Shavuot, this journey that we're currently on. This midrash kind of collapses the 40 days at Sinai between Moses leaving the camp and the creation of the golden calf into a fleeting moment. No sooner had the words Na'aseh v'nishma, we will do and we will listen, left their mouths, then the Israelites' hearts had turned to idolatry. The Sfat Emet has an illuminating interpretation of Na'aseh V'nishma. When we first hear the words, we will do and we will listen, it sounds kind of misguided, like why would you do something without even listening first to understand what you're doing? The Sfat Emet, however, sees the doing, the following of the laws, as just the minimum of the practice. For him, and I'll quote Zornberg and the Sfat Emet, Zornberg explains, this great faith moment of saying Na'aseh V'nishma is one in which the people declare their readiness to listen for the intimations of God's will beyond the minimum of the law. This involves, she explains, a constant attunement, a readiness to respond to the demand of the godly whenever it becomes audible. In the words of the Sfat Emet, obedience to the law is not the final goal. That is why doing is written first as a preamble to what the Sfat Emet calls the larger demand, which is ongoing attunement in each moment to hear what God would expect of us as each new circumstance arises. Our promise to stay tuned to what God expects of us is related to the laws about slavery that are referred to in this same Parsha Bahar regarding rules for liberation of slaves in the Shemitah year. Throughout Torah, we are reminded that Israelites should avoid at all costs becoming slaves again. God liberated the Israelites from Mitzrayim so they could serve God, so they could listen attentively and respond to the rules of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh without being constrained by the rules of other people. For this reason, the Sfat Emet explains, the Hebrew slave who opts for continued slavery, saying, and this is a quote from Exodus, "I love my master, I will not go free." This person has to undergo a horrible ordeal of having his earlobe pierced against the door lintel. Again, in the words of Zornberg in the Sfat Emet, he has sinned against that passion for hearing more, that hearing more that is to inform spiritual life. The very ear that heard at Sinai, "Unto me shall the Israelites be slaves and not slaves of slaves." So that very ear. Then this person went and acquired a master for himself, but the ear that heard shall be pierced. The piercing of the ear to the door lintel symbolizes how the condition of slavery immobilizes the ear, prevents the slave from tuning in to the sacred. And so, this is a lot to think about what we do when we enslave people. So, we'll nevertheless return to the final parsha of the book of Leviticus, the path to connection, reconnection with God. In this final parsha, we are exhorted to remember to stay attuned to the word of God through the promises of the blessings and the punishment of the curses if we stray. And when we read the blessings and cursings, we're struck by the contrast between the peace of mind that's described when one walks in the ways of God and the excruciating mental as well as physical torment when one strays. As I noted at the beginning of this talk, the reward for walking in the ways of God is the granting of peace in the land. And you shall lie down untroubled by anyone. And I will be ever present in your midst. I will not spurn you. I will be your God, and you shall be my people. But even here, the mental torment is hinted at. Even in the blessing, "I will not spurn you," because even in mentioning, "I will not spurn you," that idea of being spurned, of being alone and isolated and cut off from the source of compassion, that raises the threat of the curse of alienation. So then what are the actual curses? I'll just read a couple. "If you reject my laws and you spurn my rules," so this is really a relational issue, like if you spurn me, I'll spurn you. "If you reject me, then terrible things happen. Wild beasts will decimate you and bereave you of your children. Even if you are given bread to eat, you will not be satisfied. You will end up devouring your own children. And as for those of you who survive, I will cast a faintness into their hearts in the land of their enemies. The sound of a driven leaf shall put them to flight. Fleeing as though from the sword, they shall fall, though none pursues." So if we take these commands to follow every rule and these threats of horrible disaster, it sounds unbelievable and absurd. However, we can follow this Sfat Emet as a guide to understand that the most important rule is to stay attuned, to do what is called for in each moment. When we are attuned, We're aware of the interconnectedness of all of life. And in that condition, we don't feel abandoned or spurned. However, if we immobilize our ear, and for us it would be by becoming enslaved to some idol, whether it's another person or money, power, fame, whatever part we worship rather than the whole, we lose our connection to that interconnectedness. We lose our ability to tune in to what is called for in each moment. I guess the hope in these writings is that the threat of feeling alienated and alone will motivate us to repair the ruptures that are inevitably caused by our misguided attraction to shiny idols or our unintentional hurts. Hopefully, we will not have to descend into the hell on earth that is described in the curses. There is, of course, in Torah, a possibility of resentment, of redemption. When the hardened heart of the one who has strayed is softened and humbled, then God will remember God's covenant with Jacob, Isaac, and Abraham, and God will not reject them, but will remember God's covenant. For I am Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. For I, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, am their God. So this last declaration, for I, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, am their God, in this, God seems to acknowledge that just as we need to recognize that we are not separate but part of an interconnected web of relationships, God also cannot exist without us. I am yours, God is saying in this last quote that I read from Leviticus. So just as each of us has no separate, solid identity, independent of the constantly changing conditions of reality, God also has no separate identity apart from us, apart from this relationship. This is, we could say, another Jewish koan, like a bunch of words pointing to something that cannot be understood rationally or explained logically. And as soon as you think you understand it, it's gone. As Norman Fisher said in a recent Dharma talk, enlightenment is a very unstable state. If it happens, it's gone in a flash. So all we can do is continue to make the effort to stay tuned in, to listen, Shema Yisrael, without any desire or expectation that we will reach a particular goal.